This radio documentary speaks to Irish Republicans who are opposed to the Good Friday Agreement and current political process in the north of Ireland. In the course of this documentary, I spoke to Republicans who were in the IRA, on hunger strike, and members of political parties like Republican Sinn Féin, Éireagh, and the 1916 societies, as well as movements like the 32 County Sovereignty Movement, Independent Republicans, and Justice Campaigners for the Craigavon 2. These Republicans are people who are often referred to as dissident Republicans. Independent Republican Dee Fennell explains how he feels about that label.
If you're opposed to unjust governance, you're a dissident. I am a dissident. I'm not a dissident Republican. I would say other people that have betrayed Republicanism, that have now conformed with constitutional nationalism and conform with British rule in this country, are dissident Republicans. I am a dissident. I am a Republican. The two definitions are mutually exclusive.
I initially spoke with former IRA member and hunger striker Tommy McKierney, former IRA member Anthony McIntyre, President of Republican Sinn Féin Des Dalton, and member of Éireagh Pádraic Mí Chathair. I spoke to them to find out what their expectations were at the time of the Good Friday Agreement and the ceasefires in the 1990s.
Britain was most likely going to reheat the old menu from the early 70s, the Sunningdale Agreement.
All of the sacrifice on every side, all those who died, who sacrificed long years in prison and people who had lost their lives, all that sacrifice was not justified by what was on the table in 1994.
Tommy phoned Bernadette Devlin, who had earlier in the day been on radio and had commented on the ceasefire that the good guys had lost. He phoned her up and he complimented her on her comment. His phone call was overheard and was reported back to the IRA. The Director of Intelligence later said to me it was a disgrace garment up there. And it sounded like good guys lost. I says, well, I'm sure they did. He says, well, expecting that better from you.
I was in support of the 1984 ceasefire. Thought it was a proper tactic in which the IRA were to use. Then when the ceasefire broke down in February 1986, I thought it was the right thing for the IRA to do.
So after a 25-year armed campaign, what was achieved? I spoke again to Des Dalton and Tommy McKierney, as well as to member of the 1916 societies, Patrick Donoghue.
Republicans were always very clear and made it very clear that this was not a war between two sections of the Irish people, but ultimately this was a war between the British government's denial of Ireland's right to freedom and the Irish people's demand to exercise that right.
I mean, I can say tactically at the moment I don't see it as the way forward, but I would never ever condemn it. Yeah, in the same way with, you know, Sean South in 1957 again, practically zero support, but still heroes that we sing about.
Yeah. Just,
they still had a right to use controlling the disciplined force.
Parliamentary means as used by the SDLP proved ineffective. Power sharing, so-called, was offered through Sunningdale, but that wasn't brought down by the IRA, it was brought down by unionism. It took 20 years to convince them that they should do a deal. So yes, I would say that the armed campaign played a very, very significant and decisive part in bringing that state down.
So why exactly did you oppose the Good Friday Agreement if it brought about peace? I spoke again to Patrick Donoghue, Dee Fennell, Des Dalton, Tommy McKierney and Anthony McIntyre.
The six county vote essentially doesn't give me a vote in my own country. I get a vote on that day, really, to choose partition or continue partition with violence. So
right.
I was never given an option of do I want to unite my country.
For me, as a Republican, I was opposed to it because I didn't see it as a Republican document. It had no end game. It copper fast and sectarianism.
Our analysis would be that British rule is the root cause of conflict in Ireland. So obviously it wasn't addressing that fundamental cause of conflict. Secondly, we also saw it as institutionalising sectarianism, again, which was fundamentally anti-Republican. What it was doing was it was forcing people, first of all, to designate themselves as either nationalist or unionist.
The Good Friday Agreement, not only did it retain and reinforce the sectarian headcount and breakdown in the North, but it didn't deliver a fiscal responsibility.
The nature of the political game up there is that they do not have power sharing. But that's the ideological veneer they put on it because it's the lines of the peace process. They have power splitting. Whereas you explain to your community, what we get, they lose. What they get, we lose. So you perpetuate sectarianism.
but then asked about the alternatives that they proposed, and we hear about Éire Nua. I spoke again to Dee Fennell, Des Dalton, and for the first time to Francis Mackey of the 32 County Sovereignty Movement.
Well, I believe a 32 county referendum on end partition would be a good way of re-establishing the unity of the country. It's always been a core Republican principle, has always been national self-determination.
Éire Nua is about inclusivity in a real way. It's about real participation in the political process for all sections of the people. It's saying to the unionists, as well as the nationalists, you are stakeholders in all of this, fundamental stakeholders in all of this. So you, obviously then you have to have a central role in that development and that creation of a new Ireland. What we want to do is we want to engage people in this, and we also want to counter the lie, the big lie, which is there is no alternative.
What we would want to see is an end to British parliamentary activity in Ireland. We would want to see the British government relinquishing their sovereign claim.
Given their opposition, I then wondered why we hadn't heard more about their position in the media. I spoke again to Dee Fennell, Tommy McKierney and Des Dalton.
The only armed men that are looking backwards and into the past that I see are from the PSNN and the British Army, who have never went away, who have never reformed. But you try to get that message into the North Belfast News, the Andersonstown News, the Derry Journal or any other community outlet or mainstream media, and it's very, very difficult to do so.
If Republicans can't articulate a coherent and persuasive programme and narrative, they can't expect the media to do it for them.
There's definitely an attempt being made with the various centenaries, not just 2016, but over the coming decade, to finally draw a line under that revolutionary Republican tradition, to remove its legitimacy, its historical legitimacy, and with that then any current legitimacy it might hold, to ensure that not even the seeds of any future Republican resistance will remain there, and to use history to do that, to sanitise history to such a point that the coming generations will have no connection with that Republican tradition.
And how do you feel the authorities treat those who oppose the current process? I again spoke to Anthony McIntyre, Des Dalton, Patrick Donoghue and Dee Fennell.
Once Sinn Féin decided to suck the truncheon, there was going to be a radical shift in its position towards questions of injustice. And we even see getting to the point now where Sinn Féin, through Haas and all our proposals, are trying to reach an agreement whereby people can be charged if there's evidence for the past, which means that people in the IRA who Sinn Féin leadership sent out to do all these things can be charged. And I think it shows you just how much Sinn Féin have lost the plot, how they pretend that political policing has disappeared, when in fact it's very much still there. It is not as draconian as it used to be, but the only reason it's not as draconian as it used to be is because it doesn't need to be as draconian.
Martin Corey was probably the clearest example of it, where he was held in a Kafkaesque process, where that even the judge in his case was not given sight of the evidence on which he was being held. The judge was expected to accept purely the word of the British intelligence people on this, and when he was finally released, then he was put into some kind of internal exile, and so he's certainly not allowed to talk to the media about the process that led him in there.
We tried to rent out a plane on St. Patrick's Day to fly a message, and it was just going to say one Ireland, one vote, and just 1916 societies in red writing. So it was one Ireland, one vote in black writing, 1916 societies red. So there's 500,000 people in town going to see this, and armed police stormed the airport to say that plane's not leaving this place.
For every £5 that MI5 is assigned from their billions of budget per year from the British government, a pound of every £5 is spent on combating what they say is a Republican threat. We have thousands of British soldiers still in the six counties. We have a heavily armed militia in the form of the PSNA, and we have covert special reconnaissance regiment from the British Army, MI5 in operation here in the six counties.
Everyone has their own experience of how the authorities attempt to both monitor and silence that voice. Craig Avon too were imprisoned for the killing of PSNI officer Carroll. Campaigner for their release, Angela Nelson, believes a miscarriage of justice has occurred.
They were found guilty. Breton was sentenced to 25 years, and John Paul, who was 17 at the time of his arrest, was sentenced to 14 years. John Paul's car, which was not impounded at the scene immediately, but was taken away by a breakdown service of a guy in the town. During that time, it was disclosed during the trial that there was a tracking device on the car, in John Paul's car. The person who removed the tracking device, I would say, is of military origin, and he says that he took the tracking device out, put it in his evidence bag, put it on the shelf in the evidence quarter, and then he went on holiday for 2 weeks. When he came back and he checked the evidence of the tracking device, it had been tampered with.
Irish TDs and elected representatives, such as Maureen O'Sullivan, are also behind the campaign for the Justice for the Craigavon 2.
The late Gerry Conlon asked us to visit Brenda McConville's parents and to come to a meeting in their home, which would lay out the details of the case that is now known as the Craigavon 2. So we're hoping that this will go to Europe and that there will be a wider audience for what is happening, and that it will just make people who can make decisions sit up and just look at the actual facts in the case, because I do not believe that due process has been followed here.
Is there a possibility of a renewed armed campaign? Again, I got the opinions of Des Dalton and Tommy McKierney.
I think, unfortunately, yes. I think, unfortunately, the dynamic remains there for that. Pat Byrne, the former Garda Commissioner, famously in an interview, said similar things. He said that whether we like it or not, as long as there's a British presence in Ireland, there will be an IRA in one form or another.
It's a distinct possibility if we don't come to a sensible arrangement. But I think the struggle now is to highlight and emphasise and articulate the need for a sensible negotiated arrangement.
So 21 years on, how do they view Sinn Féin? This time I got the opinions of Anthony McIntyre and Tommy McKierney.
If Gerry Allen wants to have a political career, he should have got it in a way that Micheál Martin got it, or Andy Kenny got it. You know, he didn't have to off more people than Harold Shipman just to get into the dog. And I've noticed, you know, you'll always hear Sinn Féin condemn the government down here and the political class because they did in 1916 what they support the people in 1916 doing what the Provost did, yet they're hypocritical because they condemn the Provost. Mm. Sinn Féin are condemning the people who are falling in today.
Because I have noticed Sinn Féin beginning to use the language of nationalism. It described itself as speaking for and working for the nationalist population, which in the Republican canon, nationalism is not part of the Republican canon. So for that reason, I feared the direction Sinn Féin was going in.
And where to now? What is the future for Irish republicanism? Again, I spoke to Des Dalton and Tommy McKierney.
The work, the ideals and so on, and the programme of the men and women of 1916 remains to be fulfilled. And also the ideals that inspired them, we feel can be ideals for this generation, just as the revolutionary generation of 100 years ago fundamentally changed the Ireland they lived in, and they didn't sit back waiting for somebody else to do it.
I don't see republicanism being equated to United Irelandism. I talk only about a republic. And as such, the old virtues of republicanism, in my mind, the best, most pertinent, is the republicanism as detailed and articulated by James Connolly.
So what now for United Ireland? And does it have a place for unionism? And on this, the final words go to Anthony McIntyre, Tommy McKierney and Francis Mackey.
But I used to say to them, all right, they used to say to me, we're 30 years closer to United Ireland. No more 30 years ago, and I'd say, and in 60 years' time, we'll be 90 years closer than we were 30 years ago. But what does it all mean? Give us an end point. Big Lawrence McKeown would say in public, it's a process. There's no beginning, there's no middle, there's no end. I said, fuck, that's seamless, isn't it? Doesn't that just suit leaders that can peace process forever? That's just mean peace process to the left and peace process to the right and do the hokey pokey. All rubbish, all bollocks.
The future is not orange. There is no going back to the past. There will never again be a Protestant Parliament for a Protestant people in Northern Ireland.
It was very clear from some of the debates and discussions that we had that unionism was scared of a united Ireland. They believed that any culture or heritage that that they claim or aspire to would be wiped out. And yet, in the conversation as it was developed, they acknowledged that the Erenua federal structure of governance in a future United Ireland, that they could live with it.